Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible.
And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues with Jesus Calms the Wind as we pick up in Mark chapter 6, verse 48. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck.
You who think that by following the will of the Lord, everything is going to be just so rosy, peaches and cream, you got another thing coming. Jesus ordered them to go across the sea against the wind, against the storm. He put them in this position of toil and strain, and they were already weary and tired. But I love their dogged obedience. Now, it would have been a lot easier for them to just turn the boat around and row with the thing on back, you know. Why try and fight this, you know? Because you're rowing and you're not going anywhere, you know. Here's the candlelight of Bethsaida off to the right side, or, you know, I guess if you're rowing backwards, it'd be off to your left side. But, you know, you're rowing and the lights are still the same place after an hour. But Jesus told us to go, you know. And they were in this condition because they were obeying the command of the Lord. I love it. And the Lord sat there watching them. He saw them toiling in rowing. The wind was contrary. Now, it was about the fourth watch of the night. I mean, he let them really go at it for a while because the fourth watch of the night begins at 3 o'clock in the morning. The fourth watch is from 3 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock in the morning. So, I mean, these guys had really been going at it. And Jesus just sitting there watching them. Lord, it's not fair. And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea and acted like he was just going to walk right past them. Someone asked me if I thought that Jesus ever laughed. I think he has a tremendous sense of humor. You know, they're toiling, they're rowing and all. And he comes walking across the sea and, you know, just like he doesn't see him, like he's walking right past him, you know. And when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it's got to be a ghost. And they started crying out in fear. For they all saw him and they were troubled. And immediately he talked with them and he said unto them, "Be of good cheer. It is I, don't be afraid." And he went up unto them into the ship, and the wind ceased. And they were very amazed in themselves beyond measure, and they wondered. For they really didn't consider the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 with just the 5 loaves and 2 fish. For their hearts were hard, and it was just, you know, they saw it, but they didn't. And when they had passed over, they came into the land of Gennesaret and drew near to shore. So they didn't go to Capernaum, but actually a little south from Capernaum to the area of Gennesaret, which is near the little area of Magdala from which Mary Magdalene came. Now, you that have been to Israel have the advantage of being able to picture all of this in your mind. And they came to the area of Gennesaret. And they drew to shore. And as soon as they got out of the boat, the people recognized him. And they ran through that whole region all around there. And they began to carry beds, those that were sick, where they heard that he was. And wherever he entered into the villages or cities or the country, they laid the sick in the streets and they begged him that they might touch if it were but the border of his garment. And as many as it touched him were made whole. So that woman who had first touched the Lord sort of opened up an area where many people then came to the place of releasing their faith by touching him. And as many as touched were made whole. Then there came together unto him the Pharisees and certain of the scribes which came from Jerusalem. They came on up from Jerusalem to the area of Galilee. And when they saw some of his disciples eating bread with defiled, that is to say, with unwashed hands, they found fault. For the Pharisees and all the Jews, except they wash their hands often, do not eat, holding the tradition of the elders. And when they came from the market, unless they would wash, they would not eat. And many other things there be which they which have received to hold, as the washing of cups and pots and brass vessels and tables and all. I mean, all of the rules concerning ceremonial washing for cleanliness. Now, this is not hygienic. This is ceremonial. And according to the ceremonial washing, and of course, sometime after this, the Mishnah was compiled in which all of these rules and regulations were put concerning the washing. And it's interesting, all of the rules that they had concerning the washing of hands, this particular type of washing, it wasn't that you just go over and wash your hands off. You had to wash your hands in a particular way in order to be ceremonially clean. Because you see, if your hands were ceremonially dirty by touching something that someone else had touched who wasn't clean, say, you know, I was a Gentile and I had touched a coin and you touched that coin, I was a Gentile unclean. Therefore, if you touched a coin that I touched, you would be unclean too because I'm an unclean Gentile. So you go to the marketplace and you get your change and who knows who's been touching those coins. And so when you get home, you want to eat. You can't just go wash your hands hygienically and eat. You got to wash them ceremonially. And to do that, you had to, first of all, get someone to help you out because you had to have what they called a half a log of oil, which was about 2 eggshells full in the first washing. And what you do is you, with your fingers extended upward, you would take your fist and rub it into one hand as the water was poured over. Rub your fingers together and then your fist within the hand and then the other side. And you would hold your hands out this way so because anything that touches you would be unclean. So the water that you're washing with becomes unclean because it's touched you. And your hands were unclean, you see, ceremonially. So you hold them out like this so that the water drips off the wrist because you don't want that water to drip on you because any part that hit you, that would be unclean too, and then you have to go through another bath. So you hold it out like this and let the water drip on down. Then, because the water that was used is now unclean and that which is dripping off is unclean, then you would have to hold your hands downward and out from you, and they would pour another half log of water over your hands as you're holding them down and let it run off the fingers. And this is the way that if you didn't wash that way, and you would eat without going through this, and they would do it several times during a meal. You know, go through this whole ceremonial bit of washing their hands. Now, they also had these pots that you don't know what may have touched the pot. Some little fly may have landed on the pot that had landed on a Gentile's shoulder or something. And so they would also go through the process of washing the pot on the outside. However, if when the pot was open, a fly would happen to land on the inside, that was it. You had to break the thing in pieces and not leave a piece large enough to take oil to anoint your little toe. In other words, it had to really be shattered because it was unclean. A lot of rules like this. If it was brass or metal, then there was a ceremonial washing for that, and you could use that over. But pots or dishes, if they were just flat, then they would be all right. But if there were any rim on the dish and it became unclean, then you had to break it completely. You couldn't use it again. And all of these rules were codified in the Mishnah of these washings, the traditions of the elders. The Pharisees and the scribes asked him, "Why do not your disciples, according to the tradition of the elders, they're eating bread without washing their hands?" And he answered and said unto them, "Well has Isaiah prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit, in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men.'" It is interesting how easily The traditions of man can become the dogmas and the doctrines of the church. Things that are just traditions. I think that traditions are probably the hardest thing a person has to deal with as far as being free. We are bound by traditions. Traditions have a greater hold on a person than almost anything else. These traditions are deeply ingrained in us. But if you really go back to study the background of the traditions, you'll find that many times they have no biblical base at all, but oftentimes traditions are based in paganism. And yet, because they've been practiced so long in church, they become the dogma of the church, and finally the doctrines of the church. Take Halloween, the tradition of trick and treat. The children dressing up as witches and goblins and going around. Now, which one of you loving parents wants to deny your sweet little child the privilege of, you know, dressing up like a witch or a ghost or a goblin? That they might take their sack around to the neighbors and munch sweets off of them. Extort them, actually, because the idea is if you don't, you know, come through, we're going to soap your windows. It's extortion. And yet, it's tradition. Of course, when I was a kid, there were no treats. It was just tricks. Or if there was treats, I didn't hear about it. But really, as you look at the whole practice, it's quite wrong. In fact, it's extremely dangerous because there are so many stupid people in this world that there are those who get some kind of a kick out of lacing the goodies with razor blades or poison or things of that nature. And every Halloween, children inadvertently are picking up harmful things and many of them injured as the result of this. And yet parents, you know, aid and abet them in their extortion plots as they take them through the neighborhoods. You know, treat or else. But it's tradition. We can see so many flaws and wrong aspects to it, and yet, you know, which one of you have enough guts to say to your kid, no, you're not going to go out this year? It's interesting just how deeply ingrained traditions become. Now, within the church, so many traditions have developed. And unfortunately, in the church, the same things are being done which Jesus accused the Pharisees of doing, and that is teaching for doctrines the traditions of man. There are many doctrines of the church that have not a scriptural base, but have only a traditional base. The doctrine of infant baptism for salvation. You will not find one scriptural base for that doctrine. It's the traditions of men. And yet, it is held too tightly by many, many churches as solid church doctrine. But it's doctrine based upon tradition, not the foundation of the Word. And that's just one of many. For he said, you lay aside the commandment of God and you hold the tradition of men, like the washing of your pots and cups and the many other things like you do. And he said unto them, you actually are rejecting the commandment of God that you may keep your own traditions. You're putting your traditions above the commandments of God. For Moses said, honor thy father and mother, and whoso will curse his father and mother, let him die the death. But you say, if a man shall say to his father and mother, it's Corban, that is to say, a gift. By whatsoever thou mayest be profited by me, he shall be free. And you would allow him no more to give to his father and mother. I mean, he can do what he wants. Now, if you would curse your father and mother under the Jewish law, you'd be stoned. You're to honor your father and mother. And whosoever should curse his father and mother should be put to death. But they developed this tradition. You say, now, Dad, this is Corbin. I'm going to give you a gift. You are a dirty, rotten louse, and I hate you, and I've always hated you. Now, this is for your good, Dad. This is a gift for you. As long as you preface it, this is a gift. This is Corbin. That you might be benefited by this. Then you could go ahead and say whatever you wanted. That was their tradition by which they circumvented the law of God. You were actually to provide for your parents, but you say, well, it's Corban. I've given that to God. You can't have that, you know. And you could actually wipe out any obligation you had to a person by saying, anything I owe you is Corban. That is, it's dedicated to God, and therefore you can't have it. And by these traditions, they were actually negating the law of God. You make the word of God of no effect through your tradition, which you have delivered, and many things like this you do, you hypocrites, he said. And when he had called all the people unto him, he said, hearken unto me. All right, crowd, got it. Hearken unto me. And now he says probably one of the most radical things he has said up to this point. Now, Jesus said an awful lot of radical things in his life, but this, up to this point, this was probably the most radical thing that he said. And you have to understand the background in which it was said, that is, of the people. Under the Mosaic law, there were certain meats that they were forbidden to eat. One of those being swine or pig. Under the law, it was forbidden. It was considered unclean. It was forbidden. Now, during the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, that Syrian king who had conquered Israel and sought to just profane and blaspheme these people, he ordered that they eat, all of them, eat pork. It was a commandment of Antiochus Epiphanes, and if they would not eat pork, they would be put to death. And hundreds of Jews died rather than to eat pork. Thousands of them during the time of the Maccabeans. Thousands of them died rather than to violate the law and eat pork. Now, Jesus is going to say something extremely radical with this kind of a background. Hearken to me. He's talking to the crowd now. He's been talking to the Pharisees, telling them about how they've disannulled the law of God by their traditions, and now he's calling the crowd to hearken to him. And this radical statement, there is nothing from without a man that entering into him can defile him, but the things which come out of him, those are the things that defile the man. If any man has a ear to hear, let him hear. It's not what goes into a man's mouth that defiles him. Pork, whatever. Now, this was a radical departure from their traditions. In fact, when he came into the house, away from the people, his disciples said, Lord, explain that one to us. And he said unto them, are you without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatsoever thing from without enters into a man, it can't defile him, because it enters not into his heart, but only into his belly, and goes out into the draught which purges all meats? In other words, the meats are all purged out of your body. They don't defile you in a spiritual sense. And of course, we're talking about ceremonial washing. The meat that you eat doesn't defile you. Now, it can make you sick, or it can, you know, do things, but spiritually, it doesn't defile you. There's no spiritual defilement in it, because it passes through your body. And he said, that which comes out of the man, that is what defiles the man, for from within, out of the heart of men, proceeds the evil thoughts, the adulteries, the fornications, the murders, the thefts, the covetousness, the wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, the evil eye, the blasphemy, pride, and foolishness. All of these evil things come from within that defile the man. So it's not what goes in, but what comes out, and that reveals what is in the man's heart. And there's where the true spiritual defilement or purity exists in the heart. Blessed are the pure in heart. They shall see God. That's where real spiritual defilement is. Not in what you are eating, but what you are, the inward part of your life, what's in your heart. Not what's in your belly that counts. Now, from there he arose. Now, he's at the area around Gennesaret, there at the Sea of Galilee, and he went to the borders of Tyre and Sidon. Tyre and Sidon, of course, are over on the coast. You've been reading about them quite a bit of late. Tyre is about 35 miles from Capernaum in a northeasterly direction. Of course, about 20 miles further up the road is Sidon. And so Jesus left the area of the Galilee now and is going over actually into Gentile territory.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Mark on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, if you'd like to order a copy of today's message, simply order Mark 6 through 7 when visiting thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse the many additional biblical resources by Pastor Chuck. You can also subscribe to the Word for Today podcast or sign up for our email subscription. Once again, that's thewordfortoday.org. For those of you wishing to call, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-WORD, and our office hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Again, that's 1-800-272-9673. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord watch over you as you go. His hand be upon your life for good. May the Lord bless you and strengthen you and fill you with His Holy Spirit, that you might walk in His love, that you might be an instrument through which He works His work of love in a world that is filled with hate and suspicion. May your life be as a light shining in a dark place, bringing hope to those who sit in darkness.
This program has been sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.
Want to know how to gain wisdom from God? Then don't miss out on Wisdom for Today by Pastor Chuck Smith.
Hi, this is Cheryl Broderson. Growing up, I had the wonderful privilege of spending every morning with my dad. And every morning, he would impart to me just a little bit of God's wisdom. Now, you can have that same opportunity if you pick up my father's devotional, Wisdom for Today. It's a 365-day trip through the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. And each day ends with a special prayer incorporating what you learn into your heart. That's Wisdom for Today. I pray that you have a wonderful journey with my Father.
The gift of wisdom is priceless. Be sure to order Wisdom for Today by Pastor Chuck Smith as a gift for yourself or for a friend. Call The Word for Today at 1-800-272-9673. That's 1-800-272-9673. Or to read a sample, visit thewordfortoday.org.